Okay, we're just about to start the class. Good afternoon to everybody. We'll have to refresh your browsers just to make sure that you hear the audio. We're going to do a brief audio check. I'm going to continue with Maimonides 13, excuse me, his Fundamentals of Torah. His Fundamentals of Torah. We're going to continue today, Chapter 1. We're going to do Law 8 is what we're up to. And once you hear the sound, just type in audio okay, just so we have a confirmation from this end that you hear the audio fine. Referring to Maimonides' laws of the fundamentals of Torah, again, chapter 1, law 8. We'll start just momentarily, just if we have a confirmation on the audio check. Okay, John and Dallas, thank you. Just wait for everybody else to just give us a brief audio check, so this way we know everybody is picking up the sound properly. And again, once you hear the audio, just type audio okay at the bottom of your screen. That'll confirm for us that you're picking up the audio fine. Okay, Moshe, Pennsylvania, thank you. All right, Doc Lee in Texas, if you have the audio, just type audio okay at the bottom. David in New York. Safta. Okay, David, thank you. Dick in Arizona, thank you. All right, Peretz and Shmuel in Illinois, if you could both just type audio okay, let us know that you have audio, and we'll continue. We'll start the class. Again, once the class is completed, we post it online on the audio files link. So this way, if you missed any part of the class, you can go to that link and listen to the entire class from the beginning. Okay, Doc, thank you. Tracy, South Carolina, thank you for the audio confirmation. All right, Shmuel, thank you very much. Okay, looks like we're fine to go. So let's continue what we were discussing. So the last class that we had last week, we were continuing Maimonides' discussion about the fundamentals of Torah, the primary one being that our correct knowledge of God being the first cause. After talking about God being the first cause and clearly being the cause for everything else which we find in the universe, then he goes on to discuss what concepts we can have in relationship to God. What would be correct concepts, and what would be incorrect concepts. So in Law of Zion, Chapter 1, Law of Zion, he talks about the seventh law. He speaks about how God is one. He's indivisible. I mean, any concept of separation or parts or physicality is something which we have to negate in connection with God. Being that God is the cause of everything physical, he does not abide by any physical laws. He has no physicality to him. Physical is a creation. The world of the physical, the universe that we see, is a creation. Therefore, it was created by God, meaning God is not partaking of this physical universe. And therefore, is any type of concept that applies to the physical world, like divisibility, or parts, or shape, or a limitation on strength, these cannot apply to God. And that is what my mind has observed just from the actual rational laws that we see operating, just by witnessing witnessing nature, is what he was basing his argument on. But now he goes into Law 8, and now he quotes verses. So you see that there's two forms of authoritative thought that demand that a person has the right concept, being that God is not physical and has no body. One body of authoritative knowledge would be studying the physical world. That itself is a proof. But besides studying the world, the physical world, and realizing from that that the Creator is not partaking of this physical world, then there's also the Torah. So we have the statements that God made himself regarding it. So there's two areas. Like, for example, a person like Abraham, who didn't have a Torah, he was able to come to the correct ideas about God and the universe just through studying the universe. The universe itself is created in the way by God that it contains all the information necessary, and a person's mind is able to tap in and make an analysis and deduction and inductions and come up with absolute truths just by studying the universe. But aside from that, there's also a Torah that God gave, and this Torah also tells us these statements. So that's what we're going to take up now. It's a very short law, but there's some very interesting ideas in here. And again, we'll have a question and answer period periodically. So when I prompt you and you have any questions on a certain point, so then I'd like to hear what you have to say. You type it into the screen, I'll be able to see it. And this way I won't miss any of the questions or points that you'd like to make. Okay, so with that introduction, let's now commence with this law. So Maimonides says as follows. It is explicitly stated in the Torah and in the prophets that God does not have any physicality or a body. As it states, and he quotes Deuteronomy 4:39, "For God is our God, is your God." Moses is speaking to the Jews here. He says, "For God is your God in the heavens above and on the land below," meaning the earth below, end quote. So Moses is now making a statement, which Maimonides is bringing down as his first proof from the Torah. Aside from just studying the natural laws and the universe, we also have the Torah, which is an authoritative position on the fact that God is not physical. And he quotes the statement, Deuteronomy 4:39, that says, "For God is God in heaven and on the earth below." That's the quote that Maimonides brings. Then he makes a deduction and says that a body cannot be in two places. So since we're trying to show that God is not physical, look at what God said himself. He said that he is a God in heaven and on earth. And Maimonides comes in and responds to that statement that Moses made in the Torah, and he says, well, a body cannot be in two places. And God is now claiming to be God in heaven and God on earth. So it would be impossible for that to be something which is true if he was a body. You can't be in two places at one time. That's the first statement he makes. Then he continues. Maimonides continues. V'ne'emar, and it is also stated, "For you have not seen any form." So later on, Moses also tells the Jews that, remember, well, I'm not sure if it's later, it's in Deuteronomy also. It may even be earlier than this. But nonetheless, Moses says to the Jews, remember when he's telling them to recall what happened at Mount Sinai, Revelation at Sinai, he tells the people and reminds them that you did not see any form. There was no physical form. So again, you have a second verse that Maimonides is bringing here to show that the Torah sides with the opinion that God is not physical. Because Moses tells the people, remember when you were at Mount Sinai, you saw no form of God. All you saw was a mountain, fire. You heard the sounds of the shofar, but you saw no form. Furthermore, Maimonides quotes one last quote in this law, and he says, V'ne'emar, and it's also stated in prophets, quote, and this is in Isaiah, God says through the prophet Isaiah the following. He says, To who will you equate me that I should be similar? Right, Isaiah tells the people that God says openly, to who can you equate me that I would be similar? Meaning God is saying that he is not similar to anything. And Maimonides concludes and says, based on this statement in Isaiah, that if God had a body, he would be similar. So you see that in Isaiah, God himself says that there is nothing which you can equate me to. So if God had a body, then you would be able to equate it to something. You'd be able to equate him to something physical. But since he doesn't have a body, then this statement in Isaiah makes sense. Meaning there's nothing that you can equate God to. Anything we witness in the universe is our concepts or traits or character traits that cannot be applicable to God. Okay, so again, let's just review this. He makes three statements in order to show you that, again, the previous law 7, he talks about proofs just from looking at the universe and making rational deductions and reasonings just based on science. But now he says not only there do we have proof that God is not physical, but even the statements of God himself in the Torah and in prophets. So you see that there, the Torah and prophets, he brings three statements down. Now the first question, of course, is why is he bringing three? Why is not one sufficient? Why? Any time, even in the Talmud, when the one rabbi brings a proof to, for another rabbi, or if he brings a proof against another rabbi, and then if he brings another proof, so the question that Talmud always asks is, well, what's wrong with the first answer? That you had to bring a second answer. So anytime you have a rabbi or any person who's defending a certain principle, it doesn't have to be in Jewish thought, it could be anywhere. But if a person is bringing proofs to an argument, if the first proof is followed by a second proof, the question logically comes up, well, what's wrong with your first proof that you need to have additional support? So we ask that question of Maimonides. When he is trying to prove that God is not physical, why doesn't he just give one simple proof and that's it? If something is 100% true, that should be completely sufficient to prove his point. There would not be a necessity to bring additional statements. So that's one question we have. Next question we have is what's the difference between the statements that Maimonides is bringing up? Again, let's just go through the statements that he makes. The first statement he makes is, how do we prove that God is not physical? Because he quotes Deuteronomy 4:39 that says, for God is God in heaven and on the earth below. So Maimonides says on that, well, if God is claiming to be the God in heaven and earth, he can't possibly be physical, because something physical cannot exist in two realms simultaneously. Okay. That was one statement he made. Then he also says, he quotes Moses when he recalled for the Jews that when they were at Sinai, he says, don't forget that you did not see any form. For you did not see any form, Moses says to the Jews, reminding them. So here you have a second statement in the Torah, which is through God's inspiration that he gave Moses the right to say certain things. And these ideas that Moses spoke were written down because these were divine words. And Moses told the people that remember that you did not see any form. So here's your second proof in the Torah that God is not physical. Because if God was physical, he would have form. And the third is from Isaiah, where God says through Isaiah to the Jews that he formulates a question. He says, to what will you equate me that I would be similar? That's what God says. Excuse me. So you see that God is stating that it's impossible to equate me to anything at all. So everything that we witness in our short lives is physical. So if we cannot equate God to anything physical, therefore, there's another statement that shows that God is not physical. So the question we now have to come up with is, what's the necessity for all three statements? All right, so that's the question I'm going to pose to all of you now. And if you have any possibilities, feel free to type them in. All right, so the first question we have is, what is the necessity for all three statements? One statement, God says that he's the God of heaven and on earth. And Maimonides deduces, well, he can't be physical if he's in both, if he controls both realms. That's one. The second statement Maimonides brings down is that Moses tells the people, remember that you did not see any form when you were at Sinai. And the third statement, God says that you cannot equate me to anything. So the question I'm posing to all of you now is, what is the necessity for all three statements? All right, so let's take a moment, think about the questions. If you all have the questions, just type in okay on the screen. Just give me some confirmation that you hear the question clear. If not, I'll be glad to repeat it. Okay, Shoshana, Yosef in New York, David in New York, Tracy, South Carolina. Okay, good. So if you have the question, then think about the question. Okay, I only see four confirmations on the question. If there are people out there that don't have the question, just let me know. I'd be more than happy to repeat it. Okay, Doc Lee in Texas. I'll repeat the question again. Everybody else, listen up if you don't have the question clear. The question is that if Maimonides is trying to prove that God is not, he's trying to show that the Torah supports the concept that God is not physical. Okay, UC in Berkeley. I'll repeat it again now. Again, the concept that Maimonides is trying to show that is true from the Torah, not just from looking at natural law, but even the Torah itself, if he's trying to prove that the Torah supports the concept that God is not physical, what is inadequate about having one proof? Why does he have three different sources that he cites in order to show? And also, what is the difference between each source? Okay, the first source he brings down in the Devarim, Deuteronomy, he says that God says that he's in the heavens above and on the earth below, that he is God in heavens above and he is a God in earth below. Now, if that is sufficient to show that, well, he can't be in both places at the same time if he's physical, so therefore we deduce that God is not physical. Now, if that's sufficient, what is the necessity for the additional two quotes? Because Maimonides follows through and states that there was another statement that Moses made, and that is that, recall at Sinai, that you did not see any form. And then he quotes one more from Isaiah, and where God says that you cannot equate me to anything. So the first statement in the Torah is true and it's sufficient. So what is the need for the additional two statements that Moses says, recall that when you were at Sinai, you didn't see a form. And God says also later on through Isaiah that I do not equate to anything, meaning there's nothing in the physical world that you can equate me to. That means I'm not physical. So I'm suggesting that there may be additional information that we can derive from these additional passages, because we know we have a basic principle in all of Torah, prophets, and writings that there is no such thing as redundancy. God does not repeat himself. So if there's a statement which sounds similar, there has to be some new concept or a new angle that's being presented. And again, this is a very important area. Once we know that God exists, we have to now have the right understanding of what we mean by God. We can't live our lives having a belief that God is physical. This is something which is a complete heresy. It is, and it's against reality. So again, Maimonides showed earlier how we just look at the physical universe and we can realize that this had to be created by a God that's not physical. And Doc Lee in Texas is asking, well, what about Moses seeing the other side of God? Okay, Doc, that is something which, if you look at the next laws, I'm not sure if you have Maimonides' Mishneh Torah, but that will take up in the next class. But again, just to answer you briefly, that's euphemistic. Whenever it says like the finger of God or the hand of God, is a concept that's conveyed, but it doesn't mean that God has a hand or a finger. It's to give a person certain ideas when he's on the lowest level in order to have some concept. Okay. Yosef in New York, you're saying, well, God only said once that I can't be compared to anything. The other verses, Moshe is talking. Okay, but it's still God's word. Anything which is part of Scripture is condoned by God, is divinely inspired. So it's equivalent to God talking. It's just Moses representing God's concept. So it doesn't matter that it's Moses or God. So again, the question comes up as to what's the necessity if you have a complete proof in one verse. You could argue with me. You could say, well, maybe it's not a complete proof, but then I'd like to hear your position. think about the statement. The first one is that God says that, for God, your God, is the God in heaven above and on earth below. Meaning he's not limited to any physical location. Physical location is not something which is applicable. Now that can only be true about something which is not physical. You can't say that a physical substance is in the heavens and also on the earth at the same time. That's impossible. Now, he doesn't mean to say that, well, since God is not physical, therefore he can be in both places. That's not what he's saying, because something which is not physical has no location. So when he says that God is a God in heaven and on earth, the first thing you must be clear about, he says that the words of the statement, it says, Hu Elokim b'shamayim, he is the God in heaven. That means he rules the heavens, and he rules the earth. It doesn't mean that he is there. And when it says he's the God on earth, that means that he is the one that rules earth. There is no other God. Okay, so that's the question. And if anybody has a possibility, feel free to type it in. Otherwise, we'll try to suggest some answers from this end here. Okay. Let's see now. Doc Lee, you're asking, what is omnipresent? All existing. I mean, evident. He's evident everywhere. Not that he is everywhere, Doc. All right. Yosef in New York is saying, well, maybe one could argue that when Moses said, remember you didn't see God, isn't that necessarily saying that it's not physical? Well, that is exactly what he's saying, Yosef in New York. God is saying that, Moses is saying to the people, remember, you did not see any form. That means there was nothing tangible about God. So that's exactly his point. Betty in Montana is saying, can someone assist me with the audio? Okay, evidently she can't hear me. Okay, Heshi G is saying, let's see. His presence is all over, not specifically in one place. Well, again, that's what he's trying to counter. Maimonides is saying that it's not that he is there. He can't take up space. When we say that God is in the heavens and also in the earth below, that means to say that he reigns. He controls both domains. You see that Maimonides goes on, and he says it's not enough just to say that he is not physical. He also wants to remove all of the possibilities, I believe. So this is why I believe he goes on to the other two statements. But if you notice, it is interesting, because he states, I mean, if you think about it again, what are the two additional statements Maimonides makes by citing when Moses says to the people that you saw no form, and God says to Isaiah, I cannot be equated to anything. Moses says, you saw no form. And in Isaiah, we read, God says that, to what can you equate me? Meaning nothing. What's the difference between those two statements? When Moses says to the people that God has no form, and Isaiah tells the people that you cannot equate God to anything. What's the difference between saying he has no form, or he's not equatable to anything? You tell me. Think about the question. If I say that God has no form, that means one thing. But if I say that God is not equatable to anything, that means something else. I'd like you to tell me what the difference is between those two statements. And if you have the question, just type an OK on the screen. Just let me know that you hear the question fine. Okay, Rita, good to see you in New York. All right, John, Northern California, just type audio OK if you can hear the sound fine. Okay, Yosef. Okay, Doc. Doc, you hear the answer to the question that you asked before about omnipresent. Yosef, you too. You heard my answer to your question, Yosef. Okay. Now, John in Dallas is saying perhaps other things can be formless, but are not equal to God. Okay, so you're making, okay, I hear your distinction, good. All right, John in Northern California, you're writing, there is no other non-physical being like God. Correct. Okay, Rita, thank you. That's what he's saying, right. There's no other non-physical being. Right, so he wants to remove any possibility. Exactly. Okay, Yosef, what's your question on the second pasuk? I don't know what you mean, Doc, that God can traverse a two-plane theory. You have to explain what that means. Or if you're trying to say that he's not physical, but he can still be in two places, then you are saying it's physical, because only something physical can be located. The rabbis say that the world is not a place for God. God is the place of the world. If you think about it, it's an interesting concept. What does it mean? The universe is not the place of God. God is the place of the world. It means to say that we don't say the universe is the place where God exists, because God created everything. He didn't need to have geographical location to exist. He created geographical location. So he preempted anything which was physical, anything in terms of location. So when we say that God is the location or the place of the world, it means to say that because of God, the world can exist. In that sense, he is the cause of the world. When we say that God is the place of the world, meaning he is what allows the world to exist. Okay, Heshi G in Queens, you're asking, does that make God a spiritual being if he is formless? He's not physical. We can't say positively anything about God, Heshi. Yosef, New York, just because God is incomparable to something, that doesn't mean he is not physical. Well, if he's not comparable to anything in the physical world, it means that he is not physical. That is what that statement means in Isaiah. Now, to say what you're saying, Doc, that the universe is within God, that's not true. Because then you're now saying that there's some place to God. You're pinpointing the universe as taking up space with God. That we don't say. Because again, God is not equatable to anything. So you cannot say that he's equatable to the universe in any way. For example, to say the universe is within God, you're saying there's some relationship between the universe and God. That doesn't exist. That's based on Isaiah's statement, to what will you equate me? So that statement of yours, that the universe is within God, is making some equation between the universe and God. And that's exactly what Isaiah is discounting. Now, Yosef is asking, well, what about gravity? Gravity is not physical, yet it functions. Yes, laws are something which are not physical. You're right. But that does not mean that they are equivalent to God in any way. So in terms of the additional statements, let me just tell you what my suggestion is on this. Well, give me 1 second. Before I go further, just if Doc and Yosef and Heshi, if you hear what I'm saying, just type OK, just so you understand my response. You may not agree with it, but if you could just type OK that you hear it, because I'd like to continue and offer a suggestion. Okay, Betty is saying that how can we even try to imagine what God is or is not? That is the point, unimaginable, everything and nothingness at once. Okay, you're right. You're right, Betty. What we're trying to do is make a statement which understand the Torah statements. We're not coming up with our own statements, Betty. What we're doing is we're trying to understand what Maimonides is bringing down in terms of his proofs. That we're allowed to do. Okay, Yosef, you're writing, I thought that the Pasuk is trying to prove that God isn't physical because God isn't comparable to anything. Correct. But why do we need three separate verses to give us this proof? That is my question. Now, I think it's like this. I think, and you'll tell me what you think about my explanation of why we have these three verses. Because I think in the first verse, what Maimonides is doing is positing something positive. The second two verses are negations, where you're saying that something is not true about God. Right? The last two verses are saying that God is no form, and God is something which is not comparable. So those are things we're saying are negative statements. God is not this and God is not that. The first statement Maimonides makes is that God is, it's a positive concept, that he is the ruler of heaven and earth. That we can say. We're not talking about anything positive about his nature because we can't talk about anything which is not physical in terms of making positive statements about God's nature. But we can make statements about that God took the Jews out of Egypt, there were certain events that he caused, or that he rules over the world, and that's clearly shown with all the 10 plagues in Egypt. Okay, so the first statement, I believe, what my mind is trying to do is show you that unlike the previous law, which is 1:7 in the Fundamentals of Torah, where he gives you proofs based on just reasoning alone, now in 1:8 he's giving you proofs based on the Torah statements. So what he's trying to do now is show you the first thing to do, and if to give you a true idea, is to show you the positive idea. Okay. So what's the positive? The first thing is, if I'm trying to give you a new idea, I teach you the positive concept. When I'm done teaching you the positive, giving you a new piece of information, it has to be in the positive. If I give you a new information about the location of somebody, I have to give you positive information. I could tell you he's in this state. I could also clarify it by saying, well, he's not in the north part of the state. That's negative. But that also gives you information. But the first thing you want to do, you can't just come to somebody and say, listen, he's not in the north part of the state. Well, what state are you talking about? You first have to give some positive information. So that's what Maimonides does. The first thing he does, he gives you a positive statement that God rules over the heaven and the earth. But I want you to see what's very interesting about this is that you see, the first law I mentioned earlier, the first law, he talks about proofs of God being not physical and being absolutely one. He's not divisible. He's not subject to separation of parts. He doesn't quote anything from the Torah. He shows you from basic reasoning, just like Abraham did not have a Torah, but he came up with the right ideas. That means God embedded in the universe a method by which man can understand truth and come and unravel truths by using his mind. We have the ability to look at the physical universe and unravel it and see new ideas and constantly grow in absolute truths about God. Okay? Now, what happens is that even when you quote the Torah, you look at what the statement that Maimonides is bringing. That's the authoritative word of the Torah, because there's two ways you could know that God exists, that he's not that he's one and he's not divisible. One is by looking at just studying the universe. That was before the Torah was given, but now we have the Torah, so we could use the Torah statements. But what's something you should notice is that what is the statement that Maimonides brings of the Torah? He brings a statement which echoes the physical universe. Look at the statement. The statement he brings is one where he says, I am the God above in heaven and on the earth below. He's talking about the physical universe. So you see that even that the Torah is mirroring the truths about natural law. People today have a big problem. They're up in arms about science is one area, but the Torah is another area. That's not true. God created both. God created the natural laws and the Torah. So you see here, this is a great support to that, because the very proof that Maimonides brings from the Torah to show that God is not divisible, that he's not physical, the very statement that he quotes from Deuteronomy 4:39 is a statement that talks about the universe, the physical universe. Now, I see some people are writing some questions online. Just hold off on writing right now, because I'm not looking at the screen. I don't want to miss your questions. Okay, but I'll get to them. I see, Doc, you have something there, and Betty. I'll get to them in a second. But if everybody else can hold off on just typing so I don't lose that from the screen. Okay, but I just want you to note that, again, the question we had is, why is Maimonides bringing three statements? Why shouldn't one be enough? If I want to prove a point about something, I just give you one succinct, clear-cut proof that has my argument, and that should be sufficient. So we asked, why is he bringing three statements? It seems to smack of like an insufficiency on the first statement that he made. Well, the first statement's not good enough, let me bring you another proof. No, that's not what's going on. What Maimonides is doing is he's quoting from the Torah. He first gives you the positive concept, and he shows you in the positive that God is the one who rules heaven above. You look at the statement, it doesn't say that God is there. He says that he's El Kecha, he is the God. He is the ruler of heaven above and on the earth below. Meaning, but he's talking about what is on earth and what is in the heavens, that he rules it. Okay. Once he gives you the positive statement, now he wants to remove any false ideas the person may have. So that's why he brings in two negative statements. And the two negative statements are very good, because he says, first of all, God has no form. All right? God is the ruler in heaven above and earth below. That's a positive idea. But now he wants you to know, don't think that there's anything physical about God. He has no form. So he quotes Moses, who told the people, when you were at Sinai, remember, you did not see any form at all. But that itself is not still a clear enough picture yet, because even though he now shows that there was nothing, there was no form that people saw, but he wants to rule out any possibility that God is equivalent to anything in the physical world. So how does he do that? The last statement. He says, to what will you equate me to that I should be similar? He quotes Isaiah. See, Isaiah goes a step further and says, not only do I not have any form, but I'm not equivalent to anything in the physical world. That is a statement from Isaiah to show you that God is saying, I am not equivalent at all to anything. Forget form, anything. There's no equivalent whatsoever. You should remove from your mind any concept that man can have anything positive about God. God told that to Moses. Man can't know me while you're alive. It's an impossibility. Just like we cannot know the thoughts of another person, we just don't have the ability to perceive what somebody else is thinking. Only that person knows what he's thinking. There's no such thing as mind reading. Our abilities, our senses are limited to five areas. We can't traverse and exceed what we are limited by. We are limited to sensations of only five areas. So we cannot say anything positive regarding God. All right, so now we understand what Maimonides is doing by bringing in the first statement and then two more statements. Okay, then let me just go to the screen and see what the points were. Betty is saying no one limited human being can prove God's physicality or not. Well, you can with reasoning. You definitely can, Betty. That's what Maimonides is saying. And if you have a question on what I just read to you from him, feel free to type it in. Doc is saying, I believe that Maimonides is trying to show a complete picture of his philosophy, okay? Again, in science, we give our theory when we show proof of our theory with other proofs, okay? Betty is saying, in this week's Parsha, God told Moshe that he would be able to perceive his characteristics, but not know him 100%, much like we can perceive the characteristics of fire or water and the results, but not the origin of some form. Okay, you're on the track, Betty. God was telling Moses that you could know certain things. That's what he meant by you could see my back, but my face you can't see. My real essence you won't be able to know. And you're right, Betty. We only know God through the results of his creation in nature and in us. Correct. Okay, Betty is asking further. Does having a physical God make God different than how? Yes. If he's saying that God is physical, then he can't be God. Because something which is physical has a design. That means it was given its design by something else. Therefore, it's not superior. Anything physical has a certain shape, form, weight, a constitution, a color. It has certain behavioral patterns. All those things are limitations. Now, what imposed those limitations? If you say that God is physical, that means you're going to have to be able to say that something gave God that physical nature. So then he's not God anymore. Then there's something other than God that gave him the physical form. Once you say something is physical, by definition, it can't be God. Shoshana in BC, Canada, God does not exist in time, so he has no beginning or end. Okay, true. Yosef is writing, yes, because then God is bound by physical restrictions. Good, Yosef, good. So you answered Betty's question. Okay. Does a God bound by physical restriction impact your faith and how? Okay, Betty, again, if you believe that God is physical, it does impact your faith because now you are serving in your mind what you think is God, but it's really not. You're serving a fantasy. Because if you can say that God is physical, now you're saying that something gave this physical nature to God. So then there's something more superior to God. Something is limiting God if you say God is physical. It's like if I mold a piece of clay into a certain shape. Based on the fact that it has a shape, something gave the clay its shape. So the clay is now subjugated to something else. So if you say that God is physical, well, something gave physicality to God, so then he can't really be God. Sam is saying, I want to know the blessings to Abraham. Okay, that's a side point, Sam, 100. So do me a favor, send an email through the site. I just want to take up for right now the topic that we're on. Okay, Betty is saying one more thing. The grand plan. Who can know? Why should you know and no one else? I don't know what you mean by the grand plan. We're right now just talking about what we cannot, you know, what we can and cannot know about God. Okay, and that's all the questions that I see on screen right now. Okay, so I hope it's clear. Once you say that, and again, to say that God is physical goes against what Moses said. Moses told the people that God has no form. And it goes against what Isaiah said. Because Isaiah said that in God's name, what can you equate God to? So if you say that God has a physical form, then you're equating God to the physical. And that's against what God said in the Torah. And if God was physical, then he could not be in heaven and earth simultaneously. But God says he is ruling heaven and earth. But keep in mind, the reason to just think about it rationally. And again, you see Maimonides, when he quotes, he's trying to show you that in both areas are synonymous, that in terms of just studying the world without even looking at the Torah, you see that this idea must be true, that God is not divisible. He's not subject to parts. You can't divide him. Okay? No, Betty, we're not saying. Betty is writing on screen right now, characteristics, yes, but 100% knowledge about God, no, we cannot have. Yes, I agree. Even anything positive about God, we don't really know. But all we do is we can say what God has done, God, or what God does do. We're only talking about, like you said earlier, Betty, that we can know God through his actions. We know God gave the Torah. We know God desires that Jewish people should teach everybody. We know that he caused the plagues in Egypt. We can't say something positive about God's nature, because that's just like we can't guess what another person is thinking. It's beyond our comprehension. We also cannot comprehend what God's nature is. Okay. And Betty is saying, further, remember that God said to Job, to the effect, were you there when I created the seas and land? We cannot know everything. If we did, right, I agree, Betty. We're in agreement. We're in agreement. Okay. Right, so let's just go back to the point here. Now, okay, so we see that there in law, again, chapter 1, law 7, Maimonides shows you just from reasoning that God is one, that he's not divisible, and he's not physical. And also, he shows you in law 8 that the Torah itself supports this. And we also noted that the Torah's very support is one that refers to the physical world. It shows you that It's all works in harmony. The Torah is something which is made by the same creator as the physical world. So anything we see is true in the physical world, it will not contradict the Torah, and vice versa. Okay? And we see what Maimonides is doing is when he gives you first the statement that God is, rules the heavens and the earth, but he also wants you to have a removal of any positive, because to have an absolutely true idea, it means you remove all other possibilities. So that's what he's doing. He's telling you a positive statement that God rules heaven and earth. At the same time, he brings in statements to show you that he's not physical. He has no form. But not only doesn't he have form, there's nothing equatable to him. So he completely removes any possibility. He gives you the absolute only truth. Right? He negates any possibility of God being physical. And that's important if we really are to have a true concept of God. If we think God is physical anyway, then we have a false concept of God, and we are not praying to God, and our life is a waste. And that's a very important point. Some people think this is like a very innocuous type of an error. Certain errors in life, you're not going to pay the piper. You're not going to have a penalty. But when you're talking about knowledge of God, if a person thinks that God is physical, he has no share in the world to come. They once asked a great rabbi, let's say a person keeps all 613 commands, and he's a very pious Jew. The only thing is, he thinks that God is a man in heaven with a beard. So the rabbi responded, he said, it's a pity, but the person has no share in the next world. That means that he has lost any merit, anything he has done good, because his whole life of keeping the Torah system was based on a false notion of God. That's why I felt it was important that we take up this concept, that before all else, we have to have a clear conviction that God exists, and what are the right ideas that we can have about God. Not that we can have any positive knowledge of God. Again, we can't do that. God said himself, you can't know me while you're alive. He said this to the greatest of all prophets, to Moses. So certainly we can't have any positive knowledge of God. But on the flip side, we have to be able to understand and remove false ideas we have about God. Okay. So that's why he says that there's no form to God, and not only that, there's nothing equatable to God. Don't think in your mind that there's anything similar to God whatsoever. Okay, if that's clear, let's everybody type okay on screen. Just give me some feedback that you hear the ideas clearly. If the ideas are all clear, just actually put a okay on screen. Okay. It's a very important area that we have clear. And you see, Maimonides concludes and he says, and if God had a body, he would be similar to other things. So if God says, I am not similar to anything, that means he's openly saying, I am not equatable to anything in the physical world. Which makes sense, because if God created the physical world, that means that he controls the laws of the physical. They cannot control him. You want to tell me that God is physical, that means that there's something controlling God. Something is giving him a shape. It's giving him a substance. That means he's not God anymore. Okay, Doc, Shoshana, John in Dallas, Zizico, thank you. Rita in New York, Cheetown. All right, thank you for the confirmation. This has to be clear. This is something which is of the utmost importance, that we know clearly that the Creator is not subject to the laws that he created. I mean, it doesn't make sense. There are things that we can know and things that we can't know. Right now we're discussing the fact that what we must know regarding God. All right. And you see that, again, maybe repeating myself, but I think it's a very nice insight that the actual statement that Maimonides selected from all the Torah to show that God is not physical and he has no body, he quotes a statement that refers back to the laws of science. So it's important that we understand that everything we see is a creation of God. So that means that the science, the world of science, is all part of the same system as Torah. Nothing is going to be contradicted because God made everything. So Maimonides quotes a statement But God says, I am the God of the heavens and earth, meaning he's referring to the fact that I am the one that rules all the universe, because that is where a person derives his proof from to begin with. Okay, Doc is now asking a question. Do you believe that if God wanted to appear to someone in physical form that he can't? Does that limit God? Very good question, Doc. Doc is asking again like this. Is it possible if God wanted to appear to someone physical that he could do it or he can't do it? The answer is that he cannot. But that limitation is a benefit. And Doc, as a matter of fact, I would suggest that you download this week's Jewish Times because I wrote an article on whether God can do anything. And this is the exact point that I took up. You'll see, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the website, Doc, but on the left-hand side, about six links down, it says Jewish Times. If you download this week's issue, you'll see an article I wrote on this. But yes, it's God cannot make himself physical, and that would be something which shows a flaw in God, because the physical world is something which is subject to decay and to laws, and God is not subject to laws. So, no, he cannot make himself physical. Okay. So, if you would say that God does, but when we say that God is limited, don't think that that's a negative, because like in the article I'm referring to, Doc, if you have a judge who constantly judges properly and never makes a mistake. Okay, so you're familiar with the doc. Good. But again, so you read the article. Okay, so I don't have to go into it now. But we don't say the limitation is a negative. That's the mistake. People think that if you limit God, well, that's a negative. That's not true. We limit God to doing only that which is absolutely true and just and right. We also limit God to being all-knowing. We don't say God is ignorant, because according to a person who says that God can do anything, that means God can't be ignorant of himself. And that also means the worst idea is that God can kill himself. If a person wants to say God can do anything, so that means God can kill himself too. It's a ridiculous concept. So if a person just takes that full, you know, to its full end of that position, God can do anything, then you end up with impossible ideas. Okay. Betty, you're writing, 4 years ago, a woman of blessed memory said two words on the deathbed, disappear and children. Let me just read this. We're not talking about what's supposed to happen or not, Betty, so I'm not sure what you're bringing up here. Right, God does not appear in physical form. God allows us to experience his awesomeness. That's right, that's the whole purpose of the creation of the world. He created the physical world and gave man the ability to understand it. And if we are tuned in, we will know as much of God as God will allow us to know. That's correct, Betty, correct. Okay, so I think this is a very good insight for today in terms of understanding what my mind is doing. And if there's any questions now, I'll open it up to you. Does not have to be on the topic. That's really what I wanted to cover in terms of this law. Again, we'll continue next time, and you'll keep yourself posted by looking at the live classes link, and you'll see the schedule for this week. If we do another class, we'll post it there. We'll also send you out an email like you received today. But and then we'll continue with Law 9. Okay, that's what's going to go into Doc, exactly what you had asked. Doc was asking earlier, in terms of, well, if God's not physical, what does it mean in the Torah, the hand of God, and the God's eyes, or that God heard, or God smelled something? What does this mean if God is not physical? So that's the next thing we'll take up. How do we understand those statements? But for now, let me just open up the floor to you. If anybody has questions in general, this would be a time to ask them. It could be on the topic, it could be on other topics. All right, so if you have a question, you can type it in. And Doc, once you read the article on Can God Do Anything, feel free to drop me an email. Let me hear what your thoughts are on it. Okay, so if you have questions, feel free to type them in. If not, we'll probably wrap up the class. We're just closing them at 3 o'clock now. Okay, it doesn't look that there are any questions. Okay, so I hope it was clear. And again, this class will be posted on our audio files link. We usually have it posted within a half an hour after the class is over. And this way you can hear it from the beginning if you missed any part of the class. Yes, Ziziko, a bris can be performed on Shabbos, yes. Doc, no, I was actually referring today to Maimonides' Mishneh Torah, right? It's right in the beginning, the laws of the fundamentals, which a lot of them are tied into the 13 principles. Okay, so if there's no other questions at this point, we'll wrap it up for today. Stay posted. You'll see the postings on the live classes link as to when we will, you'll see the schedule, excuse me, as to when we'll pick up the next class. Any questions during the week, you can feel free to email them in. Again, feel free to download the Jewish Times. Some of what we took up today is in this past week's issue. And I look forward to learning with you all soon. And I wish everybody a good day. So everybody be well, and we'll be in touch. Okay, Doc, my pleasure. A good day to everybody.